Okay, Assalamu alaikum. Good afternoon. On behalf of the LSE Islamic Society, I'd like to thank everyone for attending today's talk on the state of Chechnya today. The talk today is entitled, The Truth Behind the Lies. Praise be to Allah, today we have been very fortunate to have with us three very distinguished speakers. We have with us today Mary Benningson, editor of the Central Asian Survey, one of the most prestigious British referral magazines in the UK. She has travelled to the Caucasus and Central Asia many times and has a close understanding of the politics of the area. Our main speaker today is Ilyas Akhmadov, the Chechen Foreign Minister. He graduated in philosophy from the Russian University of Rostov. He fought for the Russian army before becoming part of the Chechen army. He has served on many fronts under the leadership of the Supreme Commander of the Chechen Armed Forces, President Aslan Makhmudov. He has worked closely with other well-known field commanders like Shamil Basivov. Okay, before we start, I'd like to call Salman Badr al-Hassan to the stage, who will give a very short recitation from the Holy Quran before we start. Thank you.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم أذن للذين يقاتلون بأنهم ظلموا وإن الله على نصرهم لقدير الذين أخرجوا من ديارهم بغير حق إلا أن يقولوا ربنا الله.
The translation of the meaning of this is, to those against whom war is made, permission is given to fight because they are wronged, and verily Allah is most powerful for their aid. They are those who have been expelled from their homes in defiance of right for no cause except that they say, our Lord is Allah.
Thank you very much, Salman, for a wonderful recitation. Okay, today's talk will proceed as follows. Firstly, we'll have a short talk by Mary Benningson, who will give a brief background and history behind the situation. Followed by our main speaker, Ilyas Akhmadov. To conclude the meeting, there will be a question and answer session where we'll open up the floor, obviously questions and answers, more of which will come later. So without further ado, I can call upon my first speaker, Mary Benningson, to start.
Can we talk quickly?
Yes, you may, of
course. First, I would like to correct one or two things. Ilyas Akhmadov did not fight for the Russian army. He was, when he was of the age of doing military service, it was still the Soviet Union, and he was enrolled in the Soviet army like most of the other Chechen commanders, which explains why they have such a good knowledge of the way the Russians fight and of their tactics. Also, I would like to correct that President Basakhadov did not fight with Shamil Basayev. It was Shamil he was the commander-in-chief in the previous war. He is the commander-in-chief now, and it is Shamil Basayev who fights under his orders. I mean, that's just a few clarifications, which I think are important. Now, I will give a very brief. I think most of you probably have some vague idea of the history of the North Caucasus and of the Russian conquest of the North Caucasus. Some of the best books written about that period, which cover the what's called in Russian historiography the Chechen, the Caucasian War from 1825 to 1859, were written by British people like John Baddeley. There are some for those who want to learn a little bit more, a few titles like The Sabres of Paradise by Leslie Blanche, a very easy read, rather romantic, but still gives a very accurate historical background to the conflict. Also more serious, Moshe Gamer, Muslim Resistance to the Tsar, a former student of your university, of the LSE, is excellent on the military history of this conflict. Now, Russia started advancing towards North Caucasus at the end of the 18th century, And that's where the first sort of major military encounter between Russians and Chechens happened. In fact, the first effort to try and coordinate resistance among the different, many different nationalities of that region was done by a Chechen called Sheikh Mansour Ushurma. He managed to inflict some major defeat on the army of Catherine II. At that time, Russian army was all powerful, and so was the empire. And this resistance lasted for about 5 years, until the fall of the Ottoman fortress and base in Anapa on the Black Sea, when Mansour was captured and taken to Schlüsselberg fortress in St. Petersburg. This was followed by a time of reasonably quiet until the arrival in the Caucasus of General Yermolov, who had very specific ideas on how to subdue and fight the locals. And certainly he is one of the men who one can blame for having set the relation between Chechens and Russians on the wrong footing. He believed that you could only rule through fear, and it works sometimes, but it cannot work all the time. And certainly the Chechens are fairly resilient to feeling of fear. He was a great general. He was one of the great Russian generals, Victor, who entered in Paris, one of the victors of the Napoleonic Wars. And it was absolutely unbelievable for the Russian military, the Russian Tsars, and Yermolov himself, to see that what worked in other parts of the world, he defeated Napoleon after all, and how couldn't he defeat a bunch of what they considered sort of peasants in the mountains. The best way to describe his tactics were something that we can see today also, that he would walk up and down Chechnya, and also Dagestan sometimes, but mainly Chechnya, burn a few the villages, claim victory, and then move out behind the Russian lines. Basically, there was no more success in those days for the Russians to hold the territory than there is now, or to control it. Finally, his sort of regime of terror was counterproductive, and both Chechnya and Dagestan erupted under the leadership of the Dagestani imams. The most famous being Shamil, and this war went on until the defeat of Shamil in 1859. When the Russians had Prince Baryatinsky, who was the commander-in-chief, had an army of 40,000 men surrounding Shamil in his mountain redoubt of Gunib. Shamil had with him 500 of his most faithful men, and among them was one, his Chechen lieutenant, Naib, called Baysangur. It was rather colorful personality he had in his numerous wars and fight, had lost one eye, one arm, and one leg, and he used to be tied on his horse when he went fighting. So the legends or the says that Baysangur could not understand why Shamil was surrounding. He thought that for the imam it was impossible and he should die fighting but not surrender, and the story says that he threatened him with a gun. He had a gun. And Shamil just turned his back and left. And a Russian general asked Shamil why he did that. He said, because I knew the Chechen would shoot me in the back. So finally, what Baysangur did with 100 of other Chechen murids of Shamil, they managed to break out of Gunib and went and fought for another 3 years in Chechnya after Dagestan had already been conquered and, I wouldn't say pacified, but partly controlled. However, after that, there was an interesting element. There was the appearance of another Sufi brotherhood in Chechnya, the Qadiriyya, which was at first preaching a message of no resistance to evil, but very quickly that because of the hardship of Russian rule, this didn't work, and in 1877-78, both the Chechen and the Dagestani joined forces again in another major war, after which thousands were deported to Turkey, some the lucky one to Turkey, the unlucky one to Siberia. However, this was by then the Russian could feel that they had the North Caucasus under control, but never sufficiently to apply civilian rule. The North Caucasus, Chechnya and Dagestan always remained under military rule, which was the only case in the Russian Empire. Central Asia, there was no similar problem. Now, at the time, briefly now, at the time of the revolution, there was another attempt to free itself from the Russian yoke and a mountain republic, sort of a confederate republic on the model of Switzerland, I suppose, be the closest model, which was led by Chechen. The president was a Chechen, various other ministers were Dagestani, Chechen, Ingush, and so on. And this republic was even partly recognized, one can say, certainly by the Ottoman Empire. The British General Thompson, who was based in Azerbaijan, had diplomatically recognized this republic as being a sort of independent republic of Russia. Finally, unfortunately, when the Soviet the Red Army in those days managed to conquer Azerbaijan, Georgia, and Armenia, the North Caucasus was left fighting for another 2 years. Now, in that particular uprising or war, the main brunt of the fighting was actually in Dagestan, not in Chechnya, and with the defeat, Dagestan was completely broken, destroyed, and probably morally affected also, because that was the end, until this day, of any kind of resistance on the part of Dagestan, and I don't count what happened last summer as a proper effort at independence from Russia. Now, with Sovietization came again in the history of Chechnya, there's an impetus in the number of uprising. I don't the exact date on 1926, 1928, in the 1930s. Some uprising important enough to demand the intervention of a full army, Soviet army. Finally, with World War II, two uprising take part on the territory of Chechnya in 41 and 43, one in the heartland of Chechnya, another one in near Ingushetia. And that is when Stalin decided on his final solution, and you have it followed by the deportation on 23rd of February 1944 of all the Chechen nation as well as the Ingush, plus a few other North Caucasian nation like the Balkar, Karachais, Kalmyk, and the Crimean Tatars were also deported from Crimea. Now that was done, how was it done? It was done by a trick. It was the 23rd of February is Soviet Army Day, and some festivities were planned, and that was why Russian soldiers were put in every house, Chechen household. People were disarmed, and under one pretext or another, and then in one day sort of put into wagons and sent in the middle of the winter into Kazakhstan and Siberia. Although it's quite cold in Chechnya, it's an alpine climate, but nothing compared to finding yourself with no luggage or anything, no food, in the middle of the Kazakh steppe by minus 40 Celsius. Now, the people after at the end of the war, those Chechen officers, and there were many of them, for instance, the men who put the Soviet flag on top of the Reichstag was a Chechen, were all dispatched straight from the front to deportation. That lasted until the death of Stalin, when there was only a partial rehabilitation under Khrushchev, where basically the Chechens were allowed to return. They were always considered suspect still, and until 1989 there wasn't a single first secretary of the Communist Party who was a Chechen in Chechnya. The administration remained political. remained completely in control of Russians in Chechnya. That I mean until 1989. With the collapse of the Soviet Union, the Chechens were not allowed to live in Grozny. They were barred from certain jobs and any kind of responsibility for the administration of their country. With the putsch of August 91, Johar Dudayev, who had been elected chairman of the Chechen National Congress, which was a sort of liberal nationalist movement on the model of the Baltic states, was the only leader in those days among the Muslim nationalities of the Soviet Union to immediately take the support of Yeltsin against the putschist who wanted to bring of the Soviet Union back into the past. Now, despite that, when Yeltsin won the day, there was a tremendous feeling, I think, throughout the Soviet Union of freedom and that everything was possible and so on. All the old hardcore communists who had backed the putschists were promptly dismissed practically in all the republics, with the exception of Chechnya. For some reason, the Chechens, who wanted to get rid of their Supreme Soviet and Soviet administration, including their first secretary, Dokuzovgaev, who had disappeared at the time of the putsch, he was too scared to say anything. They were not allowed to do that. And within 1 week of the putsch, in the beginning of September, Russian radio was already broadcasting that there was a rebellion in Chechnya and so on. So you had very distinctly, already at that time, two different set of rules for Russia itself, for some of the other republics, but not for Chechnya. Now, despite that, Russia being weak with the collapse and the transition period, there was a gap of 4 years where Russia was trying to rebuild its power on its former colonies or dominion. And by December, as you all know, there was the first attack on the war, which coincided, among other things, with the signing of the consortium, the oil consortium in Baku. Although that was not one of that was just, I think the timing was not incidental. It was time to coincide with that, but it was not, certainly oil interests are not the only reason for this conflict, which lasts already for over two centuries. Now, as you know, what little was left standing after the first war has now been all destroyed. Nevertheless, the Russians are facing major military problems, and I will now pass you on to Ilyas.
Здравствуйте, дамы и господа. Рад возможности встретиться с вами. Благодарю вас за интерес, проявленный к этой проблеме, за то, что вы сюда пришли.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very happy to be here to be able to discuss with you, and I'm very glad that you've taken an interest in this problem.
Госпожа Бенниксон сделала прекрасный экскурс в нашу далеко не теплую историю взаимоотношений с нашими весьма малосимпатичными соседями, поэтому, я думаю, нет смысла повторять то, что она говорила.
I believe that Madame Bennigsen has done a wonderful presentation on our rather frosty relations with our none too sympathetic neighbors, so I won't bother recapping over the things that she's covered.
Поэтому я коротко остановлюсь на анализе той ситуации, которая уже на протяжении 6 месяцев разворачивается на моей родине, и остальное время мы, в общем-то, я буду готов ответить на ваши вопросы.
What I will be concerned with is analyzing the situation that has been going on for the last 6 months on my homeland, and afterwards I'll be very happy to take questions.
Как вы знаете, уже более 6 месяцев на территории моей республики идет война, объявлен поход против исламского экстремизма, объявлен поход в защиту Западной Европы от нашествия исламского экстремизма. Россия опять на себя берет роль спасения всего мира. Впрочем, когда я учился в школе по исторической доктрине, нам говорили, что Россия спасла от нашествия татаро-монгол Запад, теперь она спасает Запад от нашествия исламских экстремистов.
As you know, over the last 6 months, Russia has been waging a war against Chechnya on the pretext of fighting Islamic extremists. Russia has declared itself to be the savior of Western civilization against the Islamic hordes knocking at its gates. This is a role that Russia likes to play very much. I remember at school we were taught that Russia's historic role was to protect the West, the Western world against the Tatar-Mongol hordes. So really this is a rekindling of its belief in its ancient destiny.
Чечня объявлена центром терроризма, но все прекрасно знают, что этот центр находится немного севернее, с главным своим офисом в университете имени Дружбы Народов Патриса Лумумбы, где на протяжении многих десятилетий ковали самые высококлассные кадры террористов, в том числе, как, например, всем вам известны Шахал Карлос и тому подобные.
As you know, Russia has declared that Chechnya is the most important spy nest in the whole world. However, I would argue that one of the biggest centers for spies in the world has been a little further north at the Patrice Lumumba University in Moscow, which has produced throughout decades during the Cold War such great students as Carlos the Jackal, who I'm sure you're all familiar with.
В данном случае этот конфликт, в общем-то, совершенно не новое в наших взаимоотношениях. Это всего лишь продолжение той в трансформированной форме тех несимпатичных, как я вам сказал, отношений между нами уже на протяжении более чем 300 лет.
Essentially, this conflict isn't a new one. It's a continuation of our rather heated relationship with Russia, which has the conflict has, in essence, continued over the last, on and off, over the last 300 years.
Господин Путин в начале этой военной кампании особенно и не скрывал своих целей. Он заявил о том, что наконец-то российское руководство обладает механизмом окончательного решения чеченского вопроса. Это мне очень напоминает заявление Геббельса в 1933 году, когда речь шла о решении еврейского вопроса.
Vladimir Putin has made clear what this war is about, as he said to as he declared, this conflict is a mechanism for resolving the Chechen problem, as he termed it. This reminds me of the declaration made by Joseph Goebbels in 1933, talking about how the Nazis would deal with the Jewish problem.
По сути дела, мы наблюдаем попытку реванша за унизительное военное поражение, которое они понесли в ходе кампании 94-96 годов.
What we're seeing also is a campaign designed to gain revenge for the defeat of the Russian forces in the war of 1994-1996.
Было объявлено о том, что Россия обладает высокой технологией борьбы с терроризмом, и что, естественно, эта кампания принесет наименьшее количество жертв среди личного состава вооруженных сил России. Сколько принесет жертв чеченский народ, это мало кого интересует.
From the beginning of this conflict, Vladimir Putin declared that this would be a conflict in which Russia would use the highest possible technological means, the aim of this would be to lower the number of Russian casualties. As to whether this would lower the casualties of Chechen civilians, I don't think this interested him too much.
С малым количеством жертв среди российских солдат тоже не получается. Русские соблюдают удивительное постоянство в отношении одной вещи – это повторение своих нелепых ошибок на протяжении всей своей истории.
However, the aim of reducing Russian military casualties hasn't been realized. The amazing thing about Russia is its repetition of the same historical mistakes that it made, for example, in the First War.
И несколько тысяч русских солдат уже стали жертвами этой безумной политики.
And several thousand Russian soldiers have become victims of this senseless politics.
Я вам кратко приведу печальную бухгалтерию этой попытки борьбы с терроризмом.
I want to give you an example of how this is seen as a war against terrorism.
С начала войны несколько десятков тысяч человек чеченского мирного населения стали жертвами этой кампании.
In the first months of this conflict, several thousand Chechen civilians, peaceful civilians, became the first victims of this conflict.
Чечне не осталось ни одного населенного пункта, которое не было тотально разрушено действиями русской артиллерии и авиации.
Not one settlement in Chechnya wasn't left, at least partially destroyed, as a result of Russian bombardment by rockets and through artillery and through air bombardment.
Сотни тысяч людей лишены крова и вообще каких-либо гарантий. Никто не может гарантировать свою жизнь на один час вперед.
several thousand deaths later, nobody can give guarantees of safety to civilians.
Только в Ингушской зоне саккумулированы более 250 тысяч беженцев, которые находятся в самых ужасных условиях.
There are, of course, over a quarter of a million refugees in Ингушетия who are living in the most frightful of conditions.
Само население Ингушетии составляет 350 тысяч, и тоже задыхается от своей проблемы беженцев.
The total population of Ingushetia itself is approximately 350,000, and Ingushetia is now drowning under the weight of refugees. It also has its own refugee problem, which is a leftover from the 1991 war it had with North Ossetia.
Закрытость данного конфликта является одной из самых главных составляющих сегодняшней политики России в отношении Чечни. И практически эти контингенты беженцев лишены возможности передвигаться не только в какие-либо регионы СНГ, скажем, но даже в регионы России. Они все аккумулируются и обречены находиться в периметре боевых действий, в периметре этого конфликта.
It hasn't been made possible for these refugees to leave the conflict zone. They haven't been allowed to migrate to other parts of the CIS. And in essence, they're being bunched together in Ingushetia, which is in close proximity to the zone of conflict.
Значит, ограничена возможность допуска к ним представителей гуманитарных организаций, представителей организаций, которые следят за соблюдением прав человека, не только для оказания какой-нибудь реальной помощи, но даже для проведения инспекции на предмет ситуации с беженцами.
Foreign observers, such as representatives of humanitarian and human rights groups, haven't been allowed full access to these people in order to firstly give them humanitarian assistance and secondly to measure what the truth of their situation is.
Российское руководство не признает за эту ситуацию статуса гуманитарной катастрофы.
The Russian government refuses to recognize this situation as being a humanitarian catastrophe.
Хотя эта катастрофа очевидна для всех.
However, that this is a catastrophe is obvious to all.
Более того, она отяжелена двумя очень страшными аспектами. Это тотальное нарушение прав человека и преступление против человечности с использованием оружия массового поражения в этом конфликте.
What makes this catastrophe worse are two things. Firstly, the routine violation of individual human rights, and also the violation of human rights through the use of banned weapons against civilian targets.
Это то, что касается ситуации, значит, с мирным населением, которое стало заложником боевых действий на нашей территории.
And this is the situation of our civilian population, which has become a hostage to the war.
Военный аспект данного конфликта, он совершенно противоречит тем изначальным планам, которые были разработаны, значит, в российских штабах в Кремле.
The current conflict, however, in terms of the military sphere, the way it's going right now is in total contradiction to the plans laid in Moscow before the war began.
На протяжении этого конфликта русские уже дважды объявляли об окончании широкомасштабных боевых действий, по сути дела, об окончании войны.
In fact, twice during this conflict, the Russians have declared the conflict to be over and that the military phase of the operation is finished.
С диким восторгом они носились по руинам и водружали свои тряпки, объявляя о том, что война окончена.
With wild delight, they ran around the ruins, putting up their little rags and declaring that the war is over.
Последняя подобная декларация была после того, как наши подразделения оставили высокогорный районный центр Шатой.
The last such declaration came after our armed forces made a strategic withdrawal from the mountain village of Shatoy.
Русские генералы рапортовали, что над Шатоем водружены аж целых два российских флага, чтобы победа была наиболее убедительной.
And in fact, two Russian flags were hoisted above Shatoy so as to make it clear to everyone that this was really, you know, a big Russian victory.
Тем не менее, на протяжении последних двух недель наше подразделение практически взяли под контроль все предгорье на юго-западном и на юго-восточном направлении. Более того, была проведена блестящая операция на окраине города Грозного, который якобы находится под тотальным контролем русских частей.
Our armed forces have taken control of the mountain regions in the southeast and southwest of the country, and also, of course, they launched a spectacular operation in Grozny itself against a column of the Interior Ministry.
Позавчера я связывался, значит, с президентом Масхадовым. Он мне говорил, что сейчас русские утилизируют все, даже тактику генерала Ермолова, которую он применял более чем 100 лет назад. Эта тактика называлась «вырубки лесов», когда русские не могли воевать против нас, и они десятилетиями продвигались вперед, вырубая все кустарники и леса.
Day before yesterday, I spoke to President Maskhadov, who informed me that the tactics the Russians were attempting to throw everything into this conflict. The tactics they've now revived are the old tactics of General Yermolov, whom Madame Bennigsen mentioned, and his tactic was essentially to cut down any kind of wooded areas, any kind of any vegetation, and then move forward.
Сегодня вокруг расположения российских частей на полях и блокпостов, значит, завидным энтузиазмом вырубаются кустарники, деревья. Я думаю, что теперь окончание войны будет приравняться к последнему вырубленному дереву или кустарнику.
And it's with great delight that the Russian soldiers manning their checkpoints are cutting down trees and bushes, and I think really this conflict will be waged until the last tree and bush is cut down.
Вот кратко то, что я считал возможным до вас довести. Если у вас будут вопросы, я готов ответить.
I believe this is, I mean, here I've made a summary of the current situation, and if you have any questions, I'd be very happy to answer them.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the way this is going to work is that we have two people with roving microphones who will be on the aisles. If you'd like to put your hand up, and I will choose to ask the questions. Please could you keep your questions short and concise as possible without making any statements at all possible, so that as many of you have the opportunity to ask either Mary Bennigsen or the Foreign Minister.
My question is to Mr. Akhmedov. First of all, I'd like to express my grief and sorrow about what's going on in Chechnya nowadays. I'm from Turkey. I'd like to ask what kind of assistance or help did Chechnya receive from Islamic countries?
Я сама турчанка, и вот я хотел бы заинтересоваться, какую помощь Чечня получила от всяких исламских государств.
Спасибо, это очень интересный вопрос.
Thank you very much. It's a very interesting question.
Дело в том, что, вернее, будет сказать, какую помощь мы получили от представителей исламского мира, нежели от исламских государств.
The question, well, it would be more correct to characterize this as being what kind of help have we received from representatives of Islamic countries?
Конечно, в ходе и прошлой военной кампании и нынешней мы постоянно ощущали теплоту и поддержку рядовых мусульман всего мира, которые, в общем-то, пытаются нам помочь всем, чем можно, начиная от молитвы до каких-то своих последних сбережений. Чеченский народ нас всегда сохранит благодарность к ним.
Of course, in this war, as in the last war, we have to make a distinction between help from the government and from the ordinary Muslim population around the world. In this war, as in the last war, you know, they've helped from praying for us to giving their last bits and pieces of belongings in order to help our cause. And the Chechen people will always be grateful and will always remember this help.
Что касается исламских государств, этих государств есть одна небольшая проблема, которую я как-то уже сказал, встречаясь. Институте Сороса. Дело в том, что их правительство еще до сих пор не приняли ислам, и поэтому, в общем-то, они нам не могут оказать помощь.
Well, the problem with the so-called Islamic countries is that I mentioned this already at the Soros Institute, that what they need to do is to embrace Islam, firstly.
Безусловно, мы имеем заявление правительства Талибана о том, что они готовы признать Чеченскую республику Ичкерия.
Of course, we have the declaration by the Taliban regime that they are prepared to recognize the Chechen Republic Ichkeria.
Это заявление было раскручено в средствах массовой информации России с диким восторгом. Говорили, вот смотрите, их даже Талибан признает.
And this was used by the Russian propaganda machine with great glee, with great delight. They said, look, the Taliban recognize these people.
По сути дела, я вам официально заявляю, что этот процесс не был инициирован с нашей стороны, и раз правительство Талибан заявляет о том, что она признает нас и обеспокоена ситуацией. Для меня это свидетельство реального беспокойства по поводу соблюдения прав человека, в отличие от многих других цивилизованных государств, которые считают, что их главный приоритет – это гуманитарное право.
Of course, this recognition, the plans for this, we didn't initiate this. This was a decision solely of the Taliban regime, and the way I take it is that it shows a real concern for human rights by the Taliban regime, as opposed to other countries which pay lip service to humanitarian ideals.
Что касается других нам известных, например, Ирак. Там есть проблема, что бедняга Саддам Хусейн до сих пор наивно тешит себя иллюзиями отношении того, что русские помогут ему снять эмбарго. Естественно, он ничего не может заявить по этому конфликту.
With regards to some other more famous countries, for example, Iraq, Saddam Hussein is still laboring under the illusion that he'll receive Russian assistance he'll receive Russian help in having the economic embargo against him lifted, and as such, he's in no mood to speak out against the Russian actions in Chechnya.
Например, Иран на протяжении последних 7-8 лет играет какие-то непонятные ядерные игры с русскими, естественно, им не до Чечни.
And of course, Iran over the last 7 to 8 years has been receiving assistance in its nuclear and chemical capabilities from Russia. And I don't think Chechnya is high on their list of priorities. And this, I think, is a good summary of the reaction of so-called Islamic governments.
Hi. I have a question regarding banned weapons that you've mentioned. You said that Russian army is using mass weapons destructions, and as far as I know, they're only using volume detonated bombs, and then the usage has been prohibited by Russian generals inside of the populated areas. And then the second part of the question that I heard a lot about Chechen warriors actually digging in the canisters with dangerous chemical substances, and then exploding them so that the substances evaporate and then move towards Russian armies, like disabling them in some sort of way.
Первый вопрос о том, что вот вы говорите, Россия использует в этой войне оружие, которое запрещено пользоваться. Я как я понимаю, что они только тем оружием, которое имеет сильные бомбы, сильные взрывы, но они российские генералы только дали указ. Чисто боевых действий. И второе, я слышал, что чеченские войска были случаи, что они ранее химикатами взрывали их, и они короче пользовались ними против России.
Да, в общем-то, такая проблема существует. Бедная русская армия, она всегда вынуждена воевать с превосходящими силами противника, то есть с чеченцами, и всегда она чеченцы вооружены страшным оружием, которого до сих пор еще нет в русской армии. Это большая проблема.
Of course, yes, this is a terrible problem for the poor Russian army, which is that it's facing such a mighty opponent, such as the Chechen army. And the Chechen army is using technology against the Russian army, which obviously the Russian army hasn't got.
Значит, все эти страшные рассказы о химическом оружии. Значит, в ходе прошлой войны, исходя из логики русских генералов, я тоже являюсь военным преступником. Потому что я брал в обыкновенную гранату РПГ, предназначенную для стрельбы из гранатомета РПГ-7, мы откручивали колпачок и насыпали туда немного ДОСТа. И когда этой гранатой шарахнут по какой-нибудь квартире, то там создавалась жуткая вонь, извините меня, и потом все кричали, что мы применяем какое-то страшное химическое оружие.
Well, according to, I fought in the last campaign, and according to the criteria laid down by Russian generals, therefore, I'm a war criminal from the last war. You know, we used to take RPG rounds, and we'd unscrew the tops, and inside we put some pepper, and then we'd fire them, obviously, at targets, and it created the most awful stench. So I guess, you know, this probably makes me a war criminal.
Представьте себе, что такое какая-то канистра с ДУСТом, которая на открытом пространстве подожжена или взорвана. Какая-то ужасная угроза для целой русской армии. ДУСТ, нет, ДУСТ, ну, какой-нибудь химикат.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you imagine I translated it as being pepper. It's not pepper. It's just a chemical that leaves a bad smell. So you can imagine it's not really that much harm done from a chemical that's just simply going to leave a bad stench.
И в отношении того, что русские пользуются только сильным оружием, это не совсем верно. Например, система залпового огня типа Град и Ураган, которые используются ими ежедневно и очень больших количествах. Согласно Женевским конвенциям, запрещены для применения по населенным пунктам.
As for the Russians only using highly explosive weapons, which are allowed by international law, well, the Russians have been using weapons of mass firepower, such as the Grad and Hurricane systems, which in fact, by international conventions, the use of these is banned against civilian targets.
Например, нововведение русских в этой военной кампании использование бомб объемно-детонирующего действия, так называемого кто за один, абсолютно не скрывались для применения, и за месяц до их применения было специальное заявление пресс-службы Министерства обороны о том, что вот сейчас они чеченцам покажут.
Also, the Russians have been using air-fueled vacuum bombs known as TOS-1. And in fact, just before the conflict, the Russian Defense Ministry announced that it was going to use these weapons.
Я вам напомню, что в ходе афганской кампании были применены только две такие бомбы, и то по специальному разрешению в то время ЦК Политбюро КПСС.
In fact, if you look at the last Afghan, the war in Afghanistan, only two of these rockets, two of these weapons were used by the Red Army, and this was only under special permission from the Politburo of the CPSU.
Я вам коротко объясню смысл действия данных бомб. Эти бомбы применяются исключительно для выкуривания противника из укрепленных фортов.
The purpose of these weapons is to be able to destroy an opponent who's well entrenched in fortified positions.
Когда бомба падает, происходит взрыв, аэрозоль распространяется, заполняя все щели, и весь заполненный ею объем через какую-то долю секунды взрывается. То есть у человека, который спрятался в каком-нибудь укрытии, будь то подвал или бункер под землю, у него практически нет шансов остаться в живых в эпицентре применения этой бомбы.
The way these bombs work is that firstly they obviously explode, and then afterwards an aerosol begins to leak out from them. Now this aerosol obviously can go into cracks, various things. With regards, if this bomb explodes near a fortified location, the aerosol will then go into this location. After a while, the perimeter, the surface area over which this aerosol has spread, then explodes. So, if you're in a well-defended bunker, then you have no chance for survival.
Такими бомбами практически был стерт с лица земли город Грозный. И удивительный случай за две войны, когда мы только лишь один раз с русскими сошлись в цифре, значит, в Грозном во время начала штурма оставалось до 40 000 мирных жителей.
These TOS weapons were used in the destruction of the city of Grozny. And another interesting thing is that in Grozny itself there were 40,000 civilians when the Russian assault had begun. Obviously, many of these civilians took refuge in their basements in order to save their lives.
Первые журналисты, которые зашли в город Грозный после того, как наши подразделения оттуда ушли, говорили, что на 500 квадратных метров приходится один житель. Куда девались все эти люди?
The first journalist to enter into the city after our forces had withdrawn announced that they saw for every 500 square meters, they only saw like one resident, and they asked themselves, where have the residents gone?
Minister, it's well understood that the current campaign is a part of a much longer historical process in which the Chechen tried to assert their independence from Russia. However, the current campaign also has proximate causes, of which I can see at least two. First is a string of terrorist attacks on Russian mainland, which was blamed on Chechens, and these were unresolved. And second is the raid into Dagestan from Chechen territory by Muslim fighters, in which Chechens widely participated. Now, that furnished Russia with a wonderful defense of sovereignty argument, and allowed it to portray the current campaign as an act of self-defense. And I would like to hear your view on the motivation behind these raids, and what strategic considerations inform them.
For the Chechen side, yes.
Почему вот чеченцы сделали вот эти бомбардировки в Москве, в Волгодонске, в Буйнакске, и почему было, зачем чеченцы начали эту наступали чеченские боевики на территории Дагестана, и вот эти акции дали России великолепный аргумент, что они защищают свою национальную
Для меня является открытием, что чеченцы сделали эти взрывы. Спасибо, что вы меня поставили в известность.
Well, it's the first that I've heard that there's actually concrete proof that the Chechens were behind these bombings.
Значит, операция в Дагестане. Давайте будем подходить с точки зрения формальной все-таки, не идем по поводу российской пропаганды. Значит, операция в Дагестане с точки зрения юридического права не может называться террористической акцией. Это мятеж против законной власти, это антиконституционный мятеж, но никоим образом не террористический акт.
Well, firstly, let's look at the operation in Dagestan and try not to look at it through the lens of Russian propaganda. Firstly, the operation, technically speaking, the operation in Dagestan wasn't a terrorist operation. It was a rebellion against the legal government, if you'd like to call it, of Dagestan. But it was an upright by the local population. But it wasn't an actual terrorist action.
Что такое терроризм? Там что, происходил захват заложников, потом выдвигались какие-то требования, или там взорвали атомную электростанцию? Нет, там просто был мятеж. Там те, кто там в этом мятеже участвовал, они воевали не против мирного населения, они имели, значит, постоянные контакты с правительственными войсками, которые пытались локализовать этот мятеж. Вот и все. Давайте будем довольно четко определять термины.
Secondly, military operation. What happened in Dagestan? There was no civilians were taken hostage. No nuclear, no strategic facilities were blown up. There was a battle between government troops, and both sides had contact with each other. In this operation.
Безусловно, это вовсе не обеляет тех, кто поднял этот мятеж и кто принимал в нем участие. Это было преступление против законной власти, в данном случае против российской конституции, которая распространяется на территории Республики Дагестан.
However, the people involved in this uprising, you know, they're not blameless. Undoubtedly, this rebellion was a breach of the Russian constitution, and as such, it was illegal.
Когда говорят о вторжении, значит, чеченцев в Дагестан, они тоже неправильно, не совсем правильная формулировка. Давайте будем говорить об участии чеченцев в антиконституционном мятеже на территории Республики Дагестан.
I think it would be wrong to formulate the Dagestan episode as being I think the correct way to look at the events in Dagestan would be an anti-constitutional rebellion in which Chechens took part. As opposed to Chechen invasion.
В тот момент, как это произошло, значит, президент Масхадов и правительство Чеченской Республики Ичкерия выступило с осуждением данного конфликта и этого мятежа. Более того, было обращение к российскому руководству, значит, немедленно создать какие-нибудь комиссии, чтобы отреагировать на эту ситуацию. Но наблюдая за реакцией русских, для меня возникала такая ассоциация. Русские были похожи на охотника, который поставил капкан, и как только жертва попала в этот капкан, он с диким визгом, восторгом бросился, значит, добивать эту жертву.
Of course, as soon as this conflict in Dagestan broke out, President Masxadov and the government of the Chechen Republic Ichkeria immediately condemned it and disassociated itself from this conflict. Also, President Masxadov offered to Russia the setting up of some sort of commission which could resolve this conflict. However, I think for the Russians were very like hunters hunting prey, they were rather happy with the escalation of the situation.
Я думаю, большая иллюзия полагать, что именно взрывы в Москве и ситуация в Дагестане явилась основным мотивом начала новой кампании. Это были всего лишь казус белли, там формальный повод к войне.
I think it's an illusion to say that the ultimate cause for this latest war was the operation in Dagestan as well as the explosions in Moscow and other cities. I think these two incidents were simply formal excuses for Russia to start the war.
Например, совсем недавно выступая перед публикой, экс-премьер-министр России Степашин заявил о том, что план вторжения в Россию в Чечню был подготовлен уже в марте 1999 года.
In fact, ex-Russian Premier Sergei Stepashin declared publicly that a plan had already been formed in March 1999 for the reinvasion of Chechnya, which is before these two events.
Например, можно вспомнить заявление перед началом этой военной кампании генерала Лебедя, автора, значит, с российской стороны подписания соглашения о мире по Сувюрте в 96 году, которое четко в одной фразе выразил все отношение российского руководства к чеченской проблеме.
I'd like to bring to your notice as well a statement made by General Alexander Lebedev, the signatory on behalf of Russia at the Khasavyurt Agreement in 1996, right at the start of this conflict. And I think this statement by him aptly sums up Russian intentions towards Chechnya.
Вспоминая подписание, он говорит, что я правой рукой подписывал договор, а в голове моей вертелась только одна мысль, что необходимо как можно быстрее воспитать 50 тысяч волкодавов, чтобы смыть позор этого унижения. Как вы видите, эти переговоры были обречены в минуту подписания.
General Lebed declared, even though I was signing the agreement with my right hand, in my mind I was thinking how to raise as soon as possible 500,000 wolf killers, the Chechen's national symbol is obviously the wolf, in order to wipe away this humiliation. And I think this statement by the signatory on behalf of Russia, those peace agreements, shows Russia's true intentions towards our country.
Все было почти готово, осталось дело за немногим, найти 2-3 старых дома, найти 200-300 ненужных людей, и пустить их на воздух, и все, и машина завертелась. Это в лучших традициях КГБ, которые живые, довольно сильны.
And all that was left to do really was to find a few old apartment blocks with a couple of hundred expendable poor people, turn them into thin air, and this would be very simple for the KGB to do, because, you know, today the KGB is still alive and kicking.
What's the nature of relations of Chechnya with its neighbor Georgia? And the second question, do you foresee a flow of refugees crossing Georgian borders from mountains when it warms up?
Какая статус нашей Чечни и Грузии? И второй вопрос, вы считаете, что вот как погода чуть-чуть потеплеет, будет много чеченских беженцев в Грузии?
Ну, статуса отношений между Грузией и Чечней нет, между нами нет никаких отношений, в том числе и дипломатических. Тем не менее, президент Грузии Эдуард Шеварднадзе, в общем-то, демонстрируя свое отношение к происходящему, заявил о том, что Грузия создает режим благоприятствования для исхода мирного населения из зоны конфликта.
Well, there isn't any official status to our relationship with Georgia. We don't recognize each other. Well, they don't recognize us diplomatically, and so there's no formal relationship. However, President Eduard Shevardnadze said when speaking about this current conflict that Georgia will welcome the peaceful civilians fleeing the conflict.
Конечно, за подобное заявление Шеварднадзе, в общем-то, достаточно поплатился, потому что Россия подняла вокруг этого страшную истерику, говоря о том, что Шеварднадзе предоставляет территорию для формирования чеченских военных баз, что через эту дорогу переправляется оружие. По сути дела, по этой дороге успели пройти, значит, под постоянными бомбовыми атаками со стороны русской штурмовой авиации, которая контролировала эту дорогу, до 10 тысяч женщин, детей и стариков, которые сегодня располагаются в Панкийском ущелье в Крытовском районе Грузии.
Even President Shevardnadze's relatively innocuous statement about helping civilians was greeted hysterically by Russia, which declared that Georgia is now going to allow for territory to be used for the formation of Chechen armed formations. As for refugees coming into Georgia, approximately 10,000, mainly men, women and children, have crossed the border into Georgia under the most excruciating and difficult conditions, under constant bombardment from the Russian Air Force. And you have to remember that border road, the border road between Chechnya and Georgia is controlled by the Russians. And so currently these 10,000 are living in the Akhmetovsky region of Georgia.
Трудно себе представить, как беженцы будут переходить, даже если деревья зазеленеют, так как весь этот регион тотально усеян с воздуха контейнерами с различными минами и минными ловушками. Это будет сопряжено, безусловно, с огромным риском.
It's hard to see ultimately how refugees can make it easily across this region into Georgia when even with the weather warming up and vegetation and tree cover coming back, because this area is absolutely surrounded and dotted with mines, and it's supposed to be essentially a restricted area.
Uh, Mr. Hamadov, how do you explain the rise in kidnapping business in Chechnya during the interwar period, including the kidnapping of foreign citizens and representatives of foreign humanitarian organizations? And I'd like to hear your comments on the death of British telecom engineers in Chechnya. Thank you.
Дело в том, что в ходе первой военной кампании, значит, на той территории, которую контролировали наши подразделения, это общеизвестный факт, не было ни одного случая похищения или создания угрозы для жизни и безопасности журналистов и представителей гуманитарных организаций, которые действовали на той территории, которую мы контролируем.
As you know from the first conflict, in zones controlled by the Chechen government, during the first war, there was no danger, there was no recorded danger from the Chechen side to any foreign journalists or aid workers.
Тем не менее, вы знаете, что на территории, контролируемой русскими войсками, были убиты очень много журналистов, в том числе и русских.
As you know, the territory controlled by Russia during the first conflict, on that territory many journalists were killed. There were also Russian journalists who were killed.
Это журналистка Надежда Чайка, это журналист Санкт-Петербургской газеты Александр Пархоменко, это журналистка Гизберт, которая была убита выстрелом в затылок далеко от боевых действий в Буденновске.
Journalists such as Чайка, Александр Пархоменко and other journalists were killed in areas of battle.
Прелести с киднапингом у нас и с убийствами врачей, в том числе Красного Креста, начались после войны. Это произошло в декабре 1996 года, когда в Новых Атаглах зверски были убиты 5 представителей Красного Креста.
The spate of kidnappings and murders that began of foreigners started at the end of the war. In the first case was in December 1996, where there was the savage murder of 6 Red Cross workers in Stary Atagi.
Наши правоохранительные органы и правительство неоднократно обращалось к русским с просьбой выдать Адама Денеева, хотя бы дать возможность нам произвести допрос, так как было установлено, что за этим убийством стоит данный человек.
Our security services wanted the Russians, asked the Russian government at that time to hand over a suspect, called a Chechen suspect named Adam Deniev, for interrogation and for possible prosecution.
Значит, для вас, конечно, это неизвестный персонаж, но значит, этот человек со своим офисом недалеко от Лубянки на сегодняшний день является одним из главных претендентов на роль, значит, достойно представляющего наш народ в марионеточном правительстве, которое формирует русские на первой территории.
Obviously, this person isn't very familiar to you, but today his office, which isn't too far from the Lubyanka, the role of this man is to act as a pretender. I mean, he's vying for a position in the new puppet government that the Russians want to set up in Chechnya.
Значит, все эти многочисленные случаи киднапинга – это, в общем-то, большая трагедия и нашего народа, и нашего правительства. Дело в том, что мы неоднократно обращались к русским правоохранительным органам, чтобы создать какое-то взаимодействие между деятельностью МВД Чеченской Республики и МВД Российской Федерации, но они патологически уходили от этого, так как для них здесь превалировал политический момент, значит, это следовало чуть ли не признание официальной Чечни, если наше МВД будет сотрудничать с ними.
We offered, obviously, the spate of kidnappings and murders was a great tragedy both for the Chechen people and for the Chechen government, as well as the people concerned. Our government had actually offered in that period, when these things were taking place, for there to be increased cooperation for the Russian interior ministries and the Chechen interior ministries to work together in solving this problem. However, the Russian side completely rejected this offer, because for the Russian interior ministry to be working officially with the Chechen interior ministry meant, according to the Russians, a form of implicit recognition.
Но все эти индустрии киднаппинга, чеченские уголовные элементы занимали свое строго определенное им место.
During this whole spate of kidnappings, the Chechen criminal elements had their place within a very rigid hierarchy.
В данном случае вооруженные банды и группировки, которые этим занимались, они использовались в качестве отстойника для заложников, которые брались вне территории Чечни, таких было очень много, или же в качестве тех людей, которые брали на себя ответственность и за то, что, значит, заложники находятся у них. Хотя очень часто бывало, что заложника брали в Подмосковье, он сидел там и освобождали его в Подмосковье. Потом объявлялось о том, что проведена блестящая спецоперация на территории Чечни, и заложники освобождены.
Firstly, many claims were made that, for example, certain citizens were being held in Chechnya when they were being held in the nearby territories. Also, many of the groups, armed groups, illegal formations that claimed to be holding hostages, weren't holding them. Then Russia would have declared that they had waged a successful operation to free hostages when the truth isn't quite as simple, as black and white as that.
Особенно на протяжении последних полутора лет перед началом новой войны. Значит, русские телевизионные каналы постоянно демонстрировали счастливые освобождения десятков и десятков заложников, но никогда не назывался ни один чеченский бандит, никогда не показывали, как его наказали, и за всем этим, значит, процессом управлял великий специалист по освобождению заложников, значит, бытность тогда свой заместителем министра внутренних дел, нынешний министр Рушаев.
During the last 3 years, the Russian media would often present pictures of many hostages who were being freed. These are very happy pictures, but in all of those images, never were any Chechen suspects actually named. Never was it stated which Chechens were caught. Never was it stated what their punishment would be. And interestingly enough, the man who was in charge of these operations at the time is the current Interior Minister Rushaila.
Значит, говорилось о том, что русские спецподразделения блестящими операциями освободили кого-то. Я вам совершенно официально заявляю, что на протяжении последних 3 лет после войны на территории Чеченской Республики не было ни одного человека в русском военном мундире, разве что в качестве заложника.
In fact, the claims that the Russian security services did operations to free hostages in Chechnya over the last 3 years, I can tell you, are absolutely false. I can officially tell you that there wasn't a single Russian soldier in Chechnya in uniform, except for when they were hostage.
То есть, по сути дела, эта индустрия, правоохранительные органы в данной индустрии занимали роль посредника. В ход шли деньги. Наше правительство неоднократно обращалось с призывами не давать выкупы за заложников, потому что это поощряет преступников на дальнейшие действия. Если человек украл человека и получил за это 1 миллион долларов, то до своего смертного часа он будет искать только второй случай. Он никогда не пойдет на стройку, чтобы получать мизер.
In fact, the problem with many of the kidnappings as well was that they were resolved through a ransom being paid. Our government actually made an appeal for people not to pay ransoms, because essentially if you pay a ransom once to a kidnapper, I mean, until the day he dies, he's going to go on kidnapping. He's hardly going to go and work as a construction worker. I mean, this also helped to fuel this industry.
Индустрия киднаппинга выполняла одну из главных задач. Она делала так, чтобы на территории Чечни не было ни одного независимого наблюдателя. Я думаю, что они блестяще справились со своей ролью.
The kidnapping industry certainly had a very important role to play, which was that when Exao or D-Day would come for Chechnya, the relaunching of the military operation, there wouldn't be a single foreign observer left in the country.
Ну, вы знаете, общеизвестен, например, великий спаситель заложников Борис Березовский, через которого проходили многие-многие миллионы, которые он выплачивал якобы за освобождение заложников, но всегда говорил, что, значит, заложники освобождены без единого выкупа.
In fact, I'll give you an example. Boris Berezovsky, who was very famous for freeing hostages in Chechnya, was well known for funneling huge sums of money for these operations to free hostages, while he officially declared that he wasn't paying money at all to kidnappers in order to free hostages.
Более того, есть и более парадоксальные вещи. Когда, например, Министерство внутренних дел, выступая в качестве посредников, значит, в качестве денежного эквивалента выдавало на руки бандам оружие.
For example, the Russian Interior Ministry, when it tried to get involved in hostage release, instead of paying a financial ransom to the band's groups holding hostages, would pay them a weight in weapons instead.
Они освобождали заложника, всем офицерам давали по медали, Рушаила стал министром. Вот схематично вся ситуация с заложниками на Чечне.
And so the officers, Russian officers, were decorated for heroic feats, given medals, and, you know, Rushailo was raised to the position of Interior Ministry, and there you have it.
Конечно, я утрирую, но это очень серьезная проблема. Это проблема, с которой наше правительство без оказания реальной помощи не могло бороться. Никто нам ее не оказывал. Спецслужбы, в общем, делали все, чтобы дестабилизировать ситуацию в Чечне, чтобы в нужное время мы предстали в таком диком и ужасном образе, значит, генетических преступников.
Our government was really very had a lot of problems coping with this problem, and nobody would actually help us. I mean, we were left out on our own basically to deal with this huge problem. And I certainly believe that the Russian security services played this situation to their advantage in order to show the Chechens as being a genetically criminal people.
I want to ask the question about the oil politics and in Kokosia, and the fact that Russian economy is mainly dependent on oil revenue complicates the issue in Kokosia. And recently, and we saw that oil prices and the soared in order to stabilize the Russian economy. And a few months ago, an oil pipeline agreement that was signed between Turkey and the other Central Russian republics. And in this case, and I want to ask, and I want to get Mr. Ahmedov's opinion about oil politics and in Kokosia. And at the same time, I want to get his opinion about the recent visit by British Prime Minister Blair to Moscow and to Putin. And if we had talks about this, and we will be quite and please.
Значит, в отношении роли нефтяного вопроса в данном конфликте, в общем-то, нельзя говорить, что именно этот вопрос определяет весь порядок вещей, который сегодня существует в Кавказе. Но безусловно, что это одна из главных доминирующих причин.
Well, with regards to the role of oil politics in the Caucasus, I think it would be wrong to characterize this as being the you know, a principal factor in the situation in that region. But yes, it is an important factor.
В отношении визита Тони Блэра, я думаю, что господин Блэр нашел мне не очень удачную компанию для того, чтобы ходить в оперу.
As regards to Tony Blair's visit, I think Mr. Blair found kept some rather bad company when he went on his visit to the opera.
Thank you very much for clarifying a lot of the grey areas with regards to the Chechen situation. I think one thing that is clear is that the Chechens have a right to self-determination, and we admire the bravery of the Chechen soldiers in the face of insurmountable odds. And it is for this reason in the modern world we want to ask you, what can we do as a community, and indeed what can we do as students to help the Chechen cause of self-determination against the might of the Russian army?
Дело в том, что чеченцам не нужны ни патроны, ни солдаты. Вы знаете, что за всю нашу историю мы никогда не испытывали недостатка храбрых солдат.
Well, firstly, the one thing Chechen is not in need of is bullets or soldiers. Throughout our history, we've always had excellent soldiers.
Нам не нужно оружие и патроны, и слава богу, мы благодарим русскую армию до тех пор, пока она находится на нашей территории, мы не будем испытывать в этом недостатка.
Fortunately, we have no problems with supplying ourselves with weapons. We're very grateful to the Russian army, and that for as long as they're on our territory, we have a good source. We have a good weapons supply.
Все, что вы можете для нас делать, это пытаться узнать правду и говорить об этом везде, где это можно. Это самая большая помощь, которую мы ждем от кого-либо.
I think the biggest thing that you can do for us is really just to tell the truth about this conflict and to spread, to make people aware of it. You know, spread news this far and wide.
Спасибо за ваше желание помочь нам.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's very touching to your desire to help us.
In 1920, General Thompson recognized the independence of the North Caucasian Federation on behalf of the British government. This recognition was never subsequently retracted. Also, it was recognized by the governments of Germany, Turkey, and Austria-Hungary. Thus, when John Major in 1946 said, apropos of the Chechen War, "This is an internal affair of Russia's," either he was lying or he didn't know his own country's history. It doesn't seem that Tony Blair is much better informed. When you were in the Foreign Office, did you ask for an explanation? And if so, what was it?
Ну, прежде всего, я думаю, не нужно обвинять Тони Блэра в том, что он не знает дипломатическую историю. Я думаю, что его достаточно хорошо учили. Дело в том, что была признана Горская республика, в состав которой входило несколько республик, но не была признана сама по себе Чечня, поэтому я думаю, не нужно обвинять Блэра в незнании этой истории.
I don't think it's absolutely necessary to blame Tony Blair for not knowing diplomatic history well enough. I think he's been well educated. The problem with the 1920 North Caucasian Confederation was that it comprised several countries, so recognition of it didn't actually mean explicit recognition of Chechen independence alone.
И встречаясь в Foreign Office, я не вел с ними речи о независимости, сейчас такой проблемы не стоит. Сейчас есть конкретная проблема, есть такая ситуация, где целый народ находится на грани тотального физического уничтожения, и все мои разговоры, они касаются, как правило, возможности реального влияния на этот конфликт, чтобы остановить его как можно быстрее. Вот, в общем-то, наш разговор касался этого аспекта.
My main business at the Foreign Office wasn't to seek diplomatic recognition. It was mainly to explain to them that our nation is on the brink of a genocidal war of extermination. And my main business there was to ask the Foreign Office to take active steps in bringing this conflict to an end, bringing it to the negotiating table.
I have another question relating to the technicalities of independence. It's this use of the term rebels by the British media. When the new Russian constitution, which unlike its Soviet predecessor, explicitly forbids secession, was put to all the component parts of the Russian Federation to sign, Chechnya refused to sign and became by that act de jure and de facto an independent country. How then can we explain the use of the term rebels by the British media? What are the rebels against?
Я думаю, об этом надо спросить тех, кто так называет нас, не меня.
Well, I think that question is better addressed to those people who call us rebels, and I can't really answer the question. You have to ask the media themselves.
I just want to say your position is quite clear and understandable. As you are foreign minister of Chechnya, I would like to ask you, what's your attitude toward other similar conflicts, as for instance in Kurdistan?
Дело в том, что, во-первых, конечно, Чеченская Республика Ичкерия не связана никакими дипломатическими узами с Турцией, и я довольно свободен в своей оценке того, что происходит. Даже как непризнанный министр, значит, в отношении того, что происходит в Кыргызстане.
Well, firstly, the Chechen Republic of Ichkeria obviously has no formal diplomatic links with Turkey, so I'm quite free in being able to assess the situation with regards to Kurdistan.
Здесь мы имеем вечную проблему противоречия между категорией территориальной целостности и правом народа на самоопределение.
Well, once again, we have a situation where there's a conflict between the notions of the territorial integrity of a state and the right for nationalities to self-determination.
К сожалению, сегодня дипломатическая международная практика еще не настолько совершенна, чтобы понять, что категория территориальной целостности не может превалировать над жизнью целого народа, над его правом на жизнь.
Unfortunately, the international community has failed to grasp the fact that the concept of territorial integrity should never blot out the right of a nation to exist, to live.
Остается только лишь надеяться, что это упущение будет наконец-то урегулировано хотя бы в третьем тысячелетии.
I hope by the third millennium this problem will be resolved of minorities.
Okay. Hello. I'd like to ask you. It seems to me, when you look at this conflict, the main victim, as in any conflict, is the civilian population. It's been victim to the Russian marauding soldiers, to Islamic fundamentalists, and to radical Chechen nationalists. I would like you to say what you reckon the situation of Chechnya is going to be like once the Russians might eventually pull out. Is it going to be another Afghanistan of arm trafficking and drug trafficking and Islamic fundamentalists? And I would also like to ask a question to the journalist. You talked a lot about the historic roots of this conflict. People have also talked about other aspects, like, for instance, mafia connections, that Chechnya was a big outlet for the Russian mafia, and Chechens wanted to have more of the profits. And other people have pointed to personal conflicts between Yeltsin and Dudayev. I'd like to comment you on other causes of this conflict.
Ну, первый вопрос, конечно, вам это вот чеченское, конечно, действительно, часть чеченского населения пострадало очень жутко от исламских фундаменталистов, российской армии, чеченских экстремальных, чеченских националистов. Какое будущее будет Чечня после войны с нами, думаю, еще такое исламское фундаменталистическое, как Талибан будут продавать наркотики, уже воспринимают исламский фундаментализм. Второй вопрос был бы Мария, это было вот стадио, то есть другая причина, вы говорили про историческую причину войны. Например, ну, еще несколько причин, это мафия, чеченцы, бандиты, все так это.
Ну, значит, в отношении того, что чеченцы жутко пострадали от исламских фундаменталистов, экстремистов, националистов, вообще какой жуткий огромный набор всех названий. Я не подозревал, что их так много там. Но все эти негативные процессы, безусловно, связаны и с определенным влиянием исламского фундаментализма, как вы это называете, экстремизма. Все это было предопределено, как я говорил выше, прежде всего деструктивным отношением российского правительства к переговорному процессу. Все это было предопределено прежде всего тем узким коридором, который с 91 года оставила для нас Россия для самореализации собственной государственности. Вот причина, вокруг которой развивались все эти и развиваются все эти негативные моменты. Безусловно, если мы опять, как в ходе прошлой войны, после окончания войны, опять останемся один на один, в общем-то, с нашим малосимпатичным соседом, безусловно, эти процессы будут идти по восходящей. До тех пор, пока Чечня не станет зоной пристального внимания международного сообщества, это все будет там произрастать и доходить до ужасающих размеров.
Well, firstly, the negative influence of Islamic extremism, I mean, undoubtedly this was caused, this is a result of the first conflict, and also it was also fueled by the very narrow lifeline that we were given to the outside world by Russia. The country was isolated, had no chance to realize its independence, economically ruined, and so these phenomena fed off that. If Chechnya becomes independent again under the same conditions that occurred in 1996, these conditions will continue. These negative influences of Islamic extremism, as you termed it, will continue to grow. The only way to preserve Chechnya from these influences is really an outside power. The international community has to come in and guarantee Chechen independence and to give it a lifeline to the outside world.
Второй вопрос. Да,
правильно.
regarding the mafia, yes, indeed, there is a Chechen mafia, the Russian mafia, Dagestani mafia, and so on. The point, and it is quite powerful, in Moscow, I believe. Now, the point is that most of that mafia, the very rich one, is based in Moscow, and certainly in the first conflict, they were firmly behind Russia. I don't know what the situation is at present, but there was, I think, one Russian humorist said that if the first war was a fight against mafia, then we should have bombed Moscow, not Grozny.
In your campaign for independence and self-determination, it sounds as though you may have convinced many of the people in the room. The international community is yet rather less than convinced. Clearly, in your presentation and discussions to us today, you've focused on the human suffering of the people of Chechnya. Is that the similar line that you tend to take with other governments, and do you find that that gets anywhere as opposed to other more political and legal arguments, or historical or even religious arguments?
Я же вам говорил, что сейчас есть конкретная проблема, ее нужно решать. Вопросы независимости – это проблема членского правительства, которая рано или поздно, я надеюсь, решит ее в соответствии с порядком, принятым в международном праве. Сегодня речь идет о том, чтобы остановить это народоубийство. Вот наша проблема.
Well, the most pressing problem for us right now is the humanitarian situation. Obviously, in time, I hope that the Chechen government will achieve independence according to and be recognized by international law. But the most important thing right now is this humanitarian catastrophe that's facing us. Well, I can turn that around and say, how can you trust Russian border guards who let them into Dagestan, let them cross the border in the first place?
Sooner or later, you will have to sit and negotiate the deal with the Russians. You were talking about humanitarian crisis, and the longer this war goes on, the more human sacrifices we're going to have. At what point will you be prepared to negotiate the deal with the Russians?
Дело в том, что не нужно выдумывать особых условий. Для переговоров есть легальная база. Резолюция Стамбульского саммита стран-участниц ОБСЕ, которая была подписана 54 представителями, значит, 54 государств, в том числе и России.
Well, there's already a basis for negotiations, which is the resolution signed at the OSCE summit by 54 countries, including Russia itself, and this can be a good basis for negotiations.
Значит, там четко обозначено, что необходимо перевести войну на переговорный уровень.
One of the articles of that declaration is that the war should be transferred to from a military sphere to a political dialogue.
В качестве субъекта переговорного процесса с одной стороны обозначено российское правительство, с другой стороны правительство Масхадова.
The subjects of the people involved in these negotiations, according to one of the articles of the treaty, should be the Russian Federation on one side and the government of President Aslan Maschadov on the other. And the OSCE has been appointed, according to this same declaration, as a potential arbiter in any negotiations.
Предполагаются открытые переговоры при наличии посредников. Какие бы условия мы готовы были бы соблюсти, значит, при проведении переговоров? Дело в том, что Маскадов дважды обращался к российскому руководству, предлагая конкретный план, который содержал компромиссы практически по всем пунктам претензий, предъявленных нами русской стороны.
As for under what conditions would we negotiate with the Russians? Well, the fact is that President Aslan Maschadov has twice offered to negotiate with Russia over specific issues that Russians have over Chechen independence, and this has been refused.
В том числе и касающиеся проблемы взрывов и дагестанского мятежа. Дело в том, что Маскадов говорил, что при наличии убедительных доказательств, при наличии независимой комиссии. Наше правительство готово выдать лиц, причастных к этим взрывам, если они являются гражданами Чеченской Республики Ичкерия или находятся на нашей территории.
With regards to the bombings in the Russian cities as well as the operation in Dagestan, Russia, the Chechen government has demanded the setting up of an independent commission to investigate these events, and if any Chechens are officially indicted, the Chechen government will cooperate in handing them over.
Также то, что касается в отношении тех лиц, кого российское руководство называют террористами, пожалуйста, при наличии убедительных доказательств, что они террористы, при посредничестве ОБСЕ мы опять же готовы их выдать.
And as for those people whom the Russian government accuses of being terrorists, those Chechen figures, well, if it's ready to produce any evidence, then under the auspices of the OSCE, we'd be ready to hand them over to Russia.
Но они должны быть террористами не с точки зрения российского руководства, потому что у них довольно оригинальные критерии в отношении терроризма, а с точки зрения международного права.
But they should be terrorists, not according to the criteria set by the Russian government, and the Russian government has a very interesting and original set of criteria for what constitutes a terrorist. They should be terrorists according to international law. And essentially, this is a summary of the conditions under which we'd sit with the Russians and negotiate.
Mr. Amadov, do you think the international community can be trusted? When you look at the last Chechen war, 1994 to 1996, the American response and the Western media response, as well as some of the satellite states, such as Saudi Arabia and some of the Gulf Arab states, they vehemently supported the Chechen war and the liberation from the Russia. Yet when you look at the same situation this time around, the response from the Saudi Arabia and perhaps some of the Gulf states has been complete silence. In fact, they've even termed such commanders such as Shamil Bozaev and Imam Al-Khattab as terrorists. Furthermore, I would like you to perhaps comment on an excerpt that was printed in New York Times, which was regarding the meeting that was held in Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe. The meeting between Igor Ivanov, which was Russian Foreign Minister, and American Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. In a letter, it was stated by Igor Ivanov, we are ready to issue instructions to the Russian delegate in the Security Council so that he will be flexible regarding the issue of Iraq. So hence, is it not a case of deal between America and Russia on the spoils of Chechnya? And for how long can we continue to trust the international community when all they simply do is play around with the spoils of war in the world, in the changing world politics?
Спирация между ними.
отношении договоренности между Магрин, Олбрайт и Игорем Ивановым, к сожалению, я не допущен к такой экзотической информации и не могу это комментировать.
Well, as for this so-called deal between Игорь Иванов and Madeleine Albright, I'm not really a party to such interesting information, and I can't really make a comment over it.
Just responding to the gentleman's comments about Islamic movements in Afghanistan being synonymous with the drug trafficking and arms trafficking, I'd like to clarify that certainly Islam does not condone any of these activities. And with regards to the Chechen conflict, there's certainly Islamic movements and certainly some Mujahideen who are playing a strong part in this. So were Chechnya to get independence, we would like to see a strong Islamic influence in that regime. But based on what you've said previously, how does this reconcile with what you've said is negative Islamic fundamentalist influence?
Прежде всего, я не говорил о негативном исламском каком-то движении в этой Чечне. Другое дело, что под видом возрождения ислама в Чечне действительно проходил целый ряд негативных процессов, которые самым непосредственным образом сказался на, в общем-то, ситуацию. И я думаю, что никому не надо учить чеченцев в том, какими они должны быть истинными мусульманами. Чеченцы сохранили верность и святость своей веры в самых тяжелых условиях ГУЛАГа. Более того, если вам когда-нибудь попадется на руки словарь по научному атеизму, там, где разворачивается сентенция вокруг определения религиозное мракобесие, в скобках помечено, сперва объясняется, что такое религиозное мракобесие, а в скобках помечено, что зоной самым ярким очагом религиозного мракобесия на территории Советского Союза является Чечня. В ходе прошлой войны мы доказали верность и своим традициям, и своей обычаи, и своей вере. Докажем ее и сейчас, поэтому то, что я говорю о негативных проявлениях ислама, вы знаете, что есть масса людей, которые, используя имя Аллаха для решения каких-то узкопартийных или узкосектантских задач, наносят вред целому народу.
Well, firstly, I wasn't meaning to denigrate any Islamic influence at all in Chechnya. What I meant to say is that there are a lot of groups that have arisen in Chechnya, you know, bringing out the banner of Islam, and under this, they've created a lot of instability. Firstly, I'd like to say that the Chechens have been one of the most religious nations in the former Soviet Union. In fact, in a book about atheism published during the Soviet era, the Chechens, in one, it's a dictionary about atheism in Soviet Union. There was a section stating that the Chechens are a people where primitive religious customs still survive, that they stick rigidly to they're fanatical with regards to their primitive beliefs. Chechens have been Muslim for a long time, and really we don't need somebody to come in there and to start teaching us how to be Muslim. We haven't lost this tradition at all. The problem is that, as you'll be aware, that there are certain groups which raise up the name of God and use the name of God in order to advance very narrow sectarian and party interests.
Я, например, знаю некоторых людей, которые на протяжении трех послевоенных лет постоянно кричали «джихад». И как только засвистел первый русский снаряд, они поехали копать окопы где-то в пригороде Стамбула и Катара и других местах.
I can tell you about some people who came, some brave soldiers who came to fight in Chechnya after the first war was over. They were living in Chechnya for a while, and as soon as the second war began, you know, previously they've been shouting jihad, jihad, and we're ready to fight. And as soon as the Russian shells started falling, they bravely retreated to Istanbul and fortified themselves there.
No, I think that's the last question. With that, I'd like to bring this meeting to a close. I'd like to say one final thank you to your special guests, Mary Benningson, of course, the foreign minister, and his very able translator. Thank you very much.